We are here with Chris Letesto of Ion Vane and also the purveyor of the former Fest, Chicago Power Fest. And Ion Vane's put out a pretty good record that I'm really, really liking so far as the six songs go that I've heard. And Chris, tell us a bit about the new album. Tell us what Ion Vane's doing right now.
Okay. The new album will be out hopefully in the spring. We're doing snippets of it when we partnered up with our friends in Mortal Music. They came up with this idea of doing DRs, or digital releases, you know, instead of calling them an EP, three or four song DRs, just to give a snapshot of the record as it's in process, so you don't have to wait to put music out for the whole album, because, you know, people don't really buy albums anymore, they're souvenirs, collector's items, whatever, so we thought that was totally cool, so we put out IV V1.0 last September, that was three songs, got a lot of good response to that. The goal was to put the next DR out 3 months later, and obviously that didn't work out because IVV 2.0 just came out in December. So just, you know, a lot of setbacks and scheduling and stuff like that. So 1.0 and 2.0 are the first two chapters of the new record, which will be self-titled. So the plan is just to get Ion Vane back on the map because we had such a span of time in between Raining Memories and where we're at now, because we parted with our singer, we retooled the band, and so on and so forth, and, you know, we're just trying to get back out there and get people back on the Ion Vane train.
One of the most impressive things, Chris, that I've really liked so far about these new songs is that, you know, you have a new singer, and I really think he fits the band really, really well, and I'm really liking his I love his vocals, actually, and he just fits the new material so well. And talk about how you got him in the band, and how it came to be working with him.
Scott Featherstone, he's awesome. He's he was in a band called Inertia, and we actually met at a festival in Baltimore called Power Mad way back in '98, I think it was. And we became friends with the band. Their bass player Joe Paciola. We became good friends and started doing show trade. And we did Power Fest back in 2000. We actually had Inertia out, and we went out to New York to play with them and blah blah blah, and always had been a big fan of Scott's. And when we were doing Raining Memories, Neil Kernan was actually doing the new Inertia album at the time called Force, played me some stuff, and it's like, man, the stuff Neil got out of him was just unbelievable. I hadn't heard Scott sound that great ever. And, you know, when our style was kind of changing, we were focusing more on the balls and chunk and just, you know, getting a little less progressive and more just, you know, song-oriented and in-your-face, you know, he and I were talking, and it's like, man, a voice like Scott's, because the music had gotten heavier, just would fit so well. And, you know, after we parted with Russ in 06, you know, God, we went through 18 months of auditions and nonsense and got this doofy guy who, you know, seemed great at the time. We started getting the head of steam going, and he just flaked out, and we had to part ways with him. And kind of out of the blue, I got an email from Scott at the beginning of 2010, and I was like, you got to be kidding me. He's like, yeah, man, if I can help out or lay down some tracks or whatever, blah, blah, blah. And we started doing demos, you know, from sending him tracks, and he was doing them in the studio, and stuff that was coming back, it's like, man, this is exactly what these tracks needed. And, you know, luckily it's worked out. You know, he definitely fits so well.
Well, you worked with Neil Kernan on these upcoming albums, and, you know, Neil, obviously everybody knows who Neil is, and Neil's produced some great metal records with Nevermore and Flotsam and Jetsam and even some other bands and other genres of music. So, you know, Neil's work speaks for itself, and obviously this album sounds very good. And how'd you end up working with Neil on this record?
Definitely. He's such a talented producer. He's got such a great ear, and he's, you know, he won't let you slide on anything, which is cool because he, you know, ends up getting the best out of you. And I remember back after Beyond Tomorrow, our first album came out, you know, and there was a couple labels, small labels that were interested, and it's just like, yeah, you know, I think we're just going to do it ourselves, blah, blah, blah. And I remember telling the band, I found out that Neil was in the Chicago area. He was, I think he was working with Slipdisc Records at the time, or just had his tenure with them was over. And I emailed Ken Golden, who'd become a friend from playing Power Mad, from Laser's Edge Records, Sensory Records, because I knew Neil was doing some stuff with Ken. I was like, hey, Ken, you know, I really want to, you know, consider, see if Neil would be interested in working with us, blah, 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 what do you suggest, and this and that. And he's like, why don't you just email him? He's like, you're a really cool guy, blah, blah, blah. And I told the band, I was like, I'm going to get Neil Curran to work with us. They're like, yeah, F you, you're nuts. And so I emailed Neil, and he called me, and, man, we had like a two-hour conversation. It was great. We hit it off, and, you know, we've been friends ever since. And he's just really been able to help us kind of find our way. I think Raining Memories turned out really well, but I think with this new stuff, I think we all just kind of figured out what Ion Vane was. I think we kind of finally came into our own. Hopefully a lot of the comparisons are gone, and we just kind of have our own sound now. And he's really been able to bring out the best with us. And he's a funny dude. We have a lot of fun together when we work. So it's good all around. It's just, you know, you just want to get stuff done, and you just can't always get it done when you want it to. So it's, you know, one of the challenges you face.
Now, eventually, releasing these batches of songs, eventually there's going to be a full-length record coming out. And, you know, could you give me some details about when this record's going to come out and a possible release date?
I'm really, really hoping for, like, a late spring time frame. We still have some more vocal tracks to cut, so we're just kind of sorting that out. It'll be 12 tunes, 10 for sure, and probably, I think we're going to look at it as two bonus tracks. I think we'll decide once, you know, once everything's kind of said and done. But I'd really like to see all 12 tunes see the light of day. I think, I think it's our best material. I think just the way everything came together and the way Scott's been adding his touch to it, you know, it's just been great. And as far as length, it's probably 12 songs or 4-ish minute long songs. It's probably about a 48-50 minute album, which is fine with me and fine with us. I mean, records just seem to get too long these days. It's like, well, we could have 74 minutes, so let's just put 74 minutes. And nowadays, like, CDs don't even exist, so who cares? You could have, you know, a 1,000-minute digital album, which would be insane, but somebody will probably try to do that.
Now, you put Chicago Power Fest on for a number of years, and obviously it stopped a few years back. And, you know, do you ever plan on doing it again and putting on that festival again down the road?
You know, we've been trying to sort that out. It's just so discouraging. You know, when we did 08, it was our best year ever. We scored Isert's return with Matt Barlow. We had their first show. We had Testament's first show in Chicago with the original lineup in 16 years, and man, it was an unbelievable fest. And, you know, there was a lot of shady stuff going on with the ownership of the Pearl Room. And make a long story short, we got screwed out of a lot of money. And, you know, they tried to, the general manager tried to make up for it in 09. And it just, that year didn't turn out the way we had hoped. And, you know, the owner ended up bailing on his lease and moving out of the country, and he owes a lot of people a lot of money, and he's apparently down in Costa Rica, and so we'll never see the money we're owed. So, you know, we're just trying to, we've been trying to find investors and trying to regroup, you know, and I think we're hoping to bring it back this year in a small form, maybe do like some mini fests, you know, try and get back up to the big fest, but nothing is planned yet. We thought we had an investor last year to bring it back, and that kind of fell through. So we definitely want to bring PowerFest back. It's just a question of when and where and how and everything else. I mean, we've even talked about maybe doing a Kickstarter. I think, you know, we've kept the story under wraps. Just, you know, at the time, we were trying to get our money, and hopefully now that we know we're not going to get it, it's not going to happen. You know, if we put the real story out there, you know, maybe people will rally around and help us, you know, bring the Power Fest back.
Now, for those that don't know, putting on one of those festivals is a very, very difficult thing to do because of the fact that, you know, there's just a lot of work that goes into it. And for those that don't know, Chris, talk about how hard it is to put one of these festivals together and the work that goes into it.
You know what? It's a lot of work. It's a lot of stress. It's, you know, and you're trying to work around everything else. It's, you know, my partner Rob, who's in Ion Vane now, and he and I played in, you know, bands. He was in 12th Gate. I was in Ion Vane. Our third partner John wasn't in the band, but you're trying to work around your day job and, you know, playing in the band and doing all this other stuff. And, you know, a lot of the times we didn't have extra staff or help to, you know, run the show. And, you know, you're dealing with agents and you're dealing with bands and you're trying to put lineups together. And, you know, everybody's touring or everybody's not touring. So, you know, you're trying to figure out an exclusive lineup and that doesn't work. And then the headliners fall through and it's just like, it's maddening at times. And then, you know, you actually get everything together and you put it out there and then people are pissed because you didn't have this band or why are you going in this direction and it's just, there's so much that goes into it behind the scenes, people just don't understand it. And you're always trying to put the best package of talent together that you can at the time for, you know, whatever money you have to work with. And so you're always playing a chess game and, you know, then when the show actually comes around, it's like, you know, you're renting gear and you're waiting for dudes to show up with gear and for the bands to show up and you know, you're just trying to cross every T and dot every I. And it's, you know, but once it's rolling, it's awesome, you know, and to see what happened in 08, just the magic in the room, you know, especially when Testament played, it was one of the most incredible feelings ever.
Yeah.
So that makes it all worthwhile.
I'll tell you what, that festival brought some great bands over here to the U.S. and had a lot of great bands doing a lot of great stuff on that fest. And, you know, I have to tell you, you guys did such a great job with it, and I would love to see that festival come back, Chris.
Thanks, I really appreciate it. It's, you know, it's a labor of love for sure, because we've never made a dime off of it, especially with that asshole skipping out of the country. But, yeah, to be able to bring a band like Eldritch over or Tad Morose and Morgana Le Fay for the first time, it's like, man, and they're so appreciative, and they're all great guys, and they just want to play. And we had Biomechanical and just a lot of cool bands from overseas that have never played here, and, you know, it's great, and the fans love it, and the bands love it, and we love it, and it's because we're fans too, and to be able to see these guys, it's just amazing.
Yeah, gotcha. Okay, so, you know, speaking of shows, I mean, I and Vandy guys planning maybe doing some shows here and there and playing out again and maybe talk a bit about, you know, your plans.
Yeah, we did two shows last year. We played with Testament, which was pretty awesome, and we played with Symphony X in September. You know, the Testament show worked out great because, you know, V1.0 had just come out on September, so that was good timing, and then the show in September with Symphony X was great because we're kind of, you know, ramping up to get 2.0 out. But ideally what we'd like to do is do some mini touring. And, you know, basically that would entail, just from a logistical and financial standpoint, like maybe three or four date blocks, like regional, and maybe do some show trades or actually work with an agent to get on some kind of decent bill where it's worth it for us to go somewhere and play on a Wednesday or Thursday. So we're looking to do something like that in the spring, too. Ideally, it would be great to have the full-length physical album out because, you know, it would be nice to tour and have some physical product that people can walk away from the show with besides T-shirts. So that's kind of the plan now. We're just trying to wrap up some things for the next DR and the actual full album and try to get out, you know, late spring as well.
Yeah.
To start doing some multiple shows.
No, talking earlier, Chris, we were talking about lineup changes and obviously, you know, setbacks with bands. And believe me, you know, as we talk, you know that I've dealt with the same thing. And my big thing, I have to ask you because of the fact that you guys did have that lineup change. Is it pretty stable? And do you guys plan on putting a lot more records out more consistently?
I hope so. I mean, we swore after the first album, when it took 4 years for Rainy Memories to come out, that was never going to happen again. But there's just so many factors you can't control, and you know, being in your own situation, you know how that works. You know, and God, it's been 8 years or whatever since Rainy Memories came out. The plan now is, especially since you don't have to wait for a full record to come out, you can just put songs out. It's like, once we get this full-length album out, you know, we don't have to wait another year. We can put another two or three songs out or whatever. As we write them and get in the studio to record them, we can put them out. And that was kind of the plan with Mortal Music, too. It's like, write them, record them. If you have a whole record of songs, we can pick the best three that we want to do first, and then the next three, and so on and so forth. But, you know, moving forward, I think if we hit two or three songs that we want to get out or whatever, we can put those out and you know, just kind of do it every 3 months or however it works, and then put another full length out if it makes sense.
Well, some of your past albums obviously sounded a little bit different. I always got like the Queensryche vibe a little bit from it, but a lot different, not quite as heavy as, say, the new stuff. And like I said, I love the new stuff quite a bit. But, you know, tell some of the listeners about some of your past records and what they're about, and give them an idea of what they sound like.
Okay. Yeah, we came out with Beyond Tomorrow, the first one in 99, and Rainy Memories in 2003, which Neil Curran produced that one. We actually signed a deal with this Now and Then Records over in the UK in 04, and that was just a debacle. You know, we finally figured that, you know, we were getting our shot to get out to Europe and play and all that stuff, and, you know, the deal went very, very smooth, and this guy was cool, and, you know, we basically delivered him an entire package ready to go. All he had to do was put it out, and it took, like, over a year, and then they went out of business shortly after, so that, you know, that whole dream of finally getting out to Europe kind of never, you know, came to fruition. But, you know, the earlier, the first two albums were a little bit more proggy, a little bit more, I guess, melodic, or, you know, we get comparisons to Queensryche a lot, which, you know, was mainly because of the vocals, which, you know, drove us all nuts, but it was kind of more of, I guess, a Dream Theater-ish, Queensryche-ish vein, you know, but it still had those heavy elements in there, which we just kind of decided to focus more on those, you know, for this newer material. And when Chuck got in the band on drums in 03, he didn't play on the first two records. When he got in the band, his style, I mean, he could play all that stuff. He's a phenomenal drummer, but he's meat and potatoes. He likes to stick with the groove and slam it, and kind of the writing just started going more in the, you know, direction we're at now with the songs that you've heard. So, you know, it was kind of like the first two records, it was one chapter, and now we've kind of moved into this chapter with this lineup that I think really defines I Am Vain. You know, and what you're hearing now, I think we've really come into our own, I think I said earlier, and, you know, this is kind of where we're at.
The one thing I love about I love about the new material, Chris, is that the band went into a much heavier direction, and I love the direction that this band has gone in. And one of the things that I'm really a big fan of is that you brought your new singer in, and he fit that material so well. And I have to ask you, did you write this material based on him joining a band? And, you know, was he a big reason that I Am Vain, that you guys decided to change the direction and go into a more heavy direction?
No, it was because a lot of stuff was written before Scott. It was, you know, I think just kind of where we were all at the time. I started experimenting with some different tunings, and I think a lot of the frustrations of what we were going through just kind of started coming through in the writing, and it felt good. You know, we were all digging it, and, you know, just unfortunately, kind of as we were going in that direction, we realized that the vocals kind of weren't working anymore, and we needed to make a change there. And, you know, it's kind of, I guess that kind of sums it up, all the frustrations, you know, that we dealt with, you know, just kind of started coming through more in the music, and that's kind of where it ended up. And Scott's voice fits perfectly with it, and it, you know, it's kind of here we are.
Yeah.
Well, Chris, for my last question, obviously it was great to have you on, and, you know, do you have any last words to say to the metal fans that are going to be checking out this interview tonight?
Well, first of all, I'd just like to thank you for taking the time and for digging the stuff and for doing what you're doing, especially to help a band like us kind of, you know, get out to more people. Like, you know, we've kind of reinvented ourselves, and we're just trying to reach everybody, and it's the landscape, the business, and fans and everything is just so crazy now. It's, you know, it's just hard to reach everybody, so we're very appreciative for this opportunity. And, you know, as far as the fans, hope you dig it. You know, we'd love to hear from you, and, you know, we're here anytime. If you got a question or anything, just email us, you know, ionvain.com, Facebook, You know, we're on Facebook and Twitter and all that stuff. We'd love to hear from you guys.